George Zimmerman just walked into the courtroom, sitting down. So, we've been having this conversation on and off air and stuff like that on our other programs. So we're gonna get into that today. But let's talk about what our main focus is for today. The main focus for today, ladies and gentlemen, on this July 13th day of rest and Saturday and all that. I and Jerry will break down the NFC West, and to me, the NFC West looks like the new best division in pro football. We'll discuss it. We'll discuss fantasy football and fantasy baseball issues. Jerry will probably go on a rant again today because I did this time. I will admit, I initiated a veto.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. That's okay, though.
Huh? What? Wow, you had to break it out like that, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. I can't believe you did that, but that's okay. You're the commissioner. You're supposed to be unbiased.
David Stern did it,
you're the commissioner.
No, I am unbiased. David Stern did the same thing several times over, but let's not get into that.
And he got lambasted at 4-2.
That's cool. I'll take the land-based thing, but I'm still the commissioner. All right. We'll also talk about the George Zimmerman trial. We have Jerry and I have similar views on the situation. We've had deep, deep conversations, as well as I've had them on my Facebook page, about, where the altercation really started. Was it the first punch thrown, or was it when Zimmerman decided to keep pursuing Trayvon Martin? So we'll discuss that as well. That's the political side of the show. We'll probably get to that first and get it out the way so that we can jump into some other things. We'll also hear from Wes Welker. Yes, Wes Welker's going to talk to us about what he thinks about Aaron Hernandez, or what he thought about Aaron Hernandez, as well as he'll compare the Broncos to the Patriots. So that's just interesting listening. So listen in, call in, do what you got to do. Go to our chat room. You go to blogtalkradio.com/BICHBK to get more information on us or to chat with us. But to get more information on all of our programs here on this network, you can go to fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com. Again, that's fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com, and see what's going on with our current shows and what we got going on as far as fantasy sports as it relates to things you might be interested in. We're always looking for sponsorship. We're always looking for someone to come on the show and give us their input as to whatever the situation is, and whether it's sports or politics. So, with that being said, JTATM Money, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do a little Trayvon Martin. How about that, okay?
Sure.
All right, we'll be back, guys. Get in set.
So you think you know something about fantasy sports, huh? Well, I've got a challenge for you. Would you be willing to go head-to-head against some of the best minds in fantasy sports, like the FSP crew, The Master, Black, Jeff the Joker, and others? Well, for a limited time, you can acquire your own fantasy team. That's right, you can own a fantasy football, baseball, or basketball team and beat the host of Fantasy Sports and Politics at their own game. For more information, go to fantasysportsandpolitics.web.com. That's fantasysportsandpolitics.web.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're back. It's me, Mr. FSP, on Fantasy Sports and Politics Saturday edition. I'll set it up like this. We have a lot of conjecture as to what happened with the George Zimmerman situation. Well, not George Zimmerman's situation, but just overall the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin situation. How it transpired, who's at fault, how the prosecution should have gone about their case, and what the defense did in the situation. So, Jerry, I'm going to let you go in for a few minutes about that, and then I'll jump in and we'll discuss it. Like I said, we have similar viewpoints, but, I mean, start where you want, like the DA getting fired, one of the high-ranking officials was forced to resign because they let the family listen to the tapes together and all that stuff. Go ahead, just go in real quick, give a quick synopsis of the case and what you think.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you a real brief. The kid was walking at night, a teenager, and at the time, and still to this day, teenagers wear hoods, and it was real popular, extremely popular. I don't know how popular it is now, but it was extremely popular when this happened. And he was walking home to his father's house, if I'm not mistaken, and in a gated neighborhood. And apparently, from what I understand, Mr. Zimmerman, who was a neighborhood watch person, in my opinion, profiled this kid because he was of a certain race and just decided that this kid was up to no good and decided to follow him. And in the time he was following him, he called 911 and,
non-emergency, he called non-emergency, not 911.
Exactly. Okay. Non-emergency and talked to the, dispatcher and she suggested to him after he told him what he was doing by following, not to follow him. From what I understand, he got in his car. After they told him to break off and happened to meet up with this kid a second time, which happens to be a heck of a coincidence, that he meets up with the second kid, and he got out of his vehicle and was confronted by the individual, and they resulted in a physical altercation, which resulted in a shooting of the teenager, and killed him. His version of the story, among witnesses that were pretty much, I would say, after the fact, but came in the middle of all this, didn't see him from start to finish, and everybody's really polarized on this, in my opinion. On one side, they're saying that this kid supposedly shouldn't have confronted the individuals, but you don't know, in my opinion, you don't know what transpired for the kid to react the way he did, supposedly react the way he did. You don't know if it was provoked by the kid. You don't know if it was provoked by Zimmerman. No one knows but the two individuals that were there at the time. Only the witnesses and so-called dispatcher who was listening to some of this stuff has an idea, but they weren't there. They weren't physically there, seeing eye to eye, which Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin have no chance to give his side of the story. So there's been a lot of conjecture and a lot of opinion on whether he should have walked away when, in fact, he did walk away and then he got confronted again, or it's so confusing. The fact is, the kid got killed by Mr. Zimmerman, okay, who was carrying a gun. Now, I don't know why he was carrying a gun at the time. He's a neighborhood watch guy. Plus, he was saying derogatory things toward about this kid. Maybe not to the kid. Well, we don't know that, but we know some of the things he was saying when he was talking on the phone to a dispatcher. But we don't know what was happening or what was said between him and the kid when he wasn't on the phone. So there's a lot of conjecture, a lot of things going on. All I can say is the kid got killed for I wouldn't say for nothing, but he did get killed for nothing over something that should have been avoided. And it's going on consistently over the all over the United States about stereotypes and how one race or one people or one part of a race is thought of.
Viewed, yeah.
Yes, thought
yeah.
of.
I mean,
as perpetrators and guys that you can't trust, which is absolutely this is 2013. 2013,
well,
and we're still going through.
Jerry, I want to jump through another hoop based upon what you just said, that last statement,
mm-hmm.
and I agree with you on a lot of it. I'm going to give a different
mm-hmm.
viewpoint
mm-hmm.
at one point in time. But I got a question for those out
mm-hmm.
there listening, and I know Jerry might agree with me on this. When the Casey Anthony trial went down and her verdict was read, did the state or city where that trial went down go and do a public service announcement about, you know, keeping your calm, keeping your control, no rioting, we're going to do this, that, and the third, and this is what we're doing to prevent any rioting? I mean,
but,
and this happened on CNN.
Yeah,
this happened on CNN where the thought process. Well, no, I know, but listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay.
Everybody thought that Casey Anthony is this terrible, god-awful person, and she
mm-hmm.
deserved to die, she deserved the sentence
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But no one felt that a riot or anything needed to be said about a riot, control needed to be put out. In
mm-hmm.
this case, the state or the city of Sanford, the officials felt they needed to do that. And a couple people on CNN said they were offended. Yes, they were African American. They said they were offended because it makes it seem as though that area believes that the black people in that area are uncontrollable,
mm-hmm.
or they are just wild beasts and they need to be warned, stuff like that. I mean, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Things are racially charged. I don't believe this case is about race. I do not.
Oh,
I
wow, man. Really?
I believe,
really?
Yes. I believe this case is about a guy who wanted to play Batman, be the vigilante. He wants to clean up the streets because his neighborhood had been terrorized by groups of teenagers, regardless of their color, regardless of whatever. And, you know, he got tired of dealing with those situations, so he became overzealous.
Are you serious?
Are you
serious? Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not saying racism had nothing to do with it. I didn't say it didn't have anything. I said
well,
it's
then,
not
then
about
it,
race.
If something happened, if it's a small part of it, then it still got something to do with it. And so race was involved, regardless of what the amount of the percentage of what race had to do with it. Because a simple fact, it was a kid, a black kid, black teenager, wearing a hood. Stereotypical look of somebody, supposedly somebody, that's either done something or is going to do something. That's the stereotype. That's the stereotype.
I truly believe,
just like when you see somebody of a different race, a woman of a different race walking up to you, or you walking up to them, and they have a pocketbook and they clutch their pocketbook.
Yes.
It's the same type of thing. He saw
Jerry,
a black
Jerry,
kid. He saw.
I got you.
Yes.
I got you. But what
okay.
I'm saying is, what I'm saying is this. Based upon the crime that was going on in that neighborhood, Trayvon fit the description of the crime, which is profiling. Was it racial profiling? I don't think so. I think it was more of profiling of this is the type of people that come in. When he says they, I don't think he means blacks. I just think he means the
I don't know about that. Which is still wrong.
So, and again, you know I'm not on his side at all. At all. I think the guy's 100% wrong. I think he should get a second degree, even though I don't think the state made a good case for second degree. I think the case for manslaughter.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that it's a case of a guy. And I think it's more of a weapons. And I think you said this yesterday, but a buddy of mine said it as well. Zimmerman fiddled 10 times or more, empowered, encouraged. He felt the courage to approach and keep following Trayvon because he had that weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had the right to use that weapon if he felt he was in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Had he not had that weapon, would he have continued to pursue Trayvon? Would he have continued to go after him? And that's my point, that I think the case, yes, it has racial undertones, but it's more on the sense of this guy playing Batman because he had a weapon and he had a little spite in his heart for folks that came in his neighborhood that broke into the houses and stuff, and he just figured. He figured, and Batman doesn't do that. Batman does his research before he goes out and does anything dumb. But he figured, you know what? These type of people are here all the time doing this stuff, and they always go out the back gate. So I'm not going to let it happen today. I'm going to do something about it today. So I called the non-emergency line. I don't think they're doing a good enough job because they always get away. So I'm going to take it upon myself to make sure he doesn't get away. And my thought process of what took place is this. I think Zimmerman was truthful up until the point that he saw Trayvon Martin a second time. I'm going to say that. I think he was truthful up to that point. Now, here's what I think actually happened to get to that altercation. And we got about 12 minutes before we jump on another topic, so I just want to let you know that.
Okay.
I think he walked up, and Trayvon was there, and Trayvon probably did say, "You got a problem with me?" And then at that moment when George Zimmerman said he reached for his phone, but he normally keeps it in the other pocket, I think George Zimmerman may have reached in the back, flashed the weapon, or what have you, and he said, "You got a problem now." And that's when Trayvon struck him, and they wrestled or whatever, and Trayvon didn't get his hand on the weapon. He didn't touch the weapon because there wasn't no DNA or anything on that. And George Zimmerman, somehow he got punched to the left, but landed somewhere on the right side. Whatever. Got it. So then Martin did mount him and was screaming for help because he knew the guy had a weapon. Now, in all this, Zimmerman says he was hitting him, he was doing all these things to him, but Zimmerman didn't try to cover up. Zimmerman didn't try to pull him off, and he had two free hands.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as I said on yesterday's show, you have about 14 inches from your elbow to the palm of your hand. So in order to get to that weapon, okay, Zimmerman had to posture up, meaning he had to take his feet and kind of try to buck. He had to try to buck Trayvon Martin because his knees were under his elbow, underneath his underarms, and reach under and grab the weapon. Because the weapon's at the small of his back.
That's a lot to do.
Exactly. While you're getting your head slammed, while someone's covering your nose and your mouth, so that's two hands slamming you, plus one hand covering your face and your mouth, and you're saying he reached for the gun? Not saying he went reaching for the gun at the same time he was slamming and covering your face, but he can't slam you with one hand, cover your face and your mouth with the other, and then also prepared to hurt you. It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make logical sense. So therefore, I think he did lie. I think he was
confrontational.
Deceptive and, well, yeah, confrontational and deceptive in his description, because you don't sit up here and say you didn't do anything wrong and this kid did everything wrong. A lot of people believe that. A lot of people believe that Trayvon Martin was wrong completely because he should have ran home. He tried to run home. He tried. He didn't get home because the guy driving a car made it to a point that was probably ahead of him, since he ran about 400 feet or 400 meters, which is about one lap. That's one lap around a track, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
How long does it take an individual to do that? Roughly, a good runner, a very good runner, takes a minute and some change.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a car, it don't take you that long to make it to that point, to bisect somebody or intersect somebody. So, you know, that's where a lot of inconsistencies came up in my point of view. And again, I think the state did a good job in a manslaughter case, but I don't think they did a good enough job for second degree. They did prove that he had some type of ill will when he went towards Trayvon Martin, but they didn't prove that it was ill will when he shot him or anything like that. So that's just my thought process. I mean, you got about, I say, about 7 minutes, and you can repeat or refute anything I just said.
No, I have to totally agree with you, man. I mean, it is what it is. It boggles my mind. See, and think about it. It's very frustrating because it's same old stuff all over again. This is 2013, and you seem like there's at least one case every year, every single year. There's one case that's something like this, and it just shows you the polarization of the country and the polarization of people still in this country in 2013, and the mindset of people in this day and age that still blame the if it's a person of a if it's a minority, they blame the minority who happens to be the victim causing them to get shot. You understand what I'm saying? It's like, you know, they're the ones that it's their fault that they got shot. Well, it seems like it's their fault because they were born black, born Hispanic, born a person of a different race in this country. When it comes to the fact is when you get things like this happen, or people's mindset to cause things like this to happen, and then people who have this similar mindset. Let me put it this way. You can, when things like this happen, you see the good and bad of people, regardless of what race they are, come out, and you can see the lines drawn in the sand on one side or the other when something like this happens. Which, I mean, in the words of Rodney King, okay. Can't we all just get along? I mean, this makes no sense that things like this keep going on. Makes absolutely no sense. I mean, and to have a person of the same color, and I say this again, and I'll keep saying it until I hammer it home, and it maybe never get hammered home, to have a person of the same race that's been, for lack of a better word, persecuted over a period of years to accept being profiled, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And you know who I'm talking about. And you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, how many people?
But see,
that's crazy. To accept being profiled. So you have somebody in law enforcement, okay? And it's happened to me, and I know it's happened to you, and it's probably happened to thousands and thousands of people, minorities, pulled over by somebody in law enforcement for supposedly a legitimate reason. Supposedly, and I preface that by supposedly. But if you're in the wrong neighborhood, if you're driving the wrong type of car, or you're looking a certain way, there is a tendency for you to be, in quotation marks, profiled as somebody that shouldn't be driving that car, shouldn't be wearing what you're wearing, or shouldn't be in that neighborhood. And that is absolutely insane. If it was a, and I was talking to my sister this morning about this, and suppose a guy of a European persuasion, and you know who I'm talking about, walks into a neighborhood that's mainly a minority neighborhood. Does he get profiled? Does he get pulled over? Does he get, for the most part, and sometimes it happens, sometimes it don't, but a lot of times it doesn't, because I feel in minority neighborhoods, people are more tolerable of other people because the fact they've gone through it, they understand it. They understand that, you know, just because the person is a different color doesn't mean he's going to be doing something of ill will. He's just a person. Guy of a European persuasion walks through a minority neighborhood, regardless of what race they are, a minority neighborhood. He's more likely to get through that neighborhood, for the most part, depending on the economic circumstances in that neighborhood. And if it's a down home, really ghetto, he may have a problem. But if it's a not so bad neighborhood, but it's still a minority neighborhood, he'll probably walk through that neighborhood not ever getting bothered. Reverse that around and have a guy walk through an affluent neighborhood who happens to be a minority. Who's going to get stopped? The guy who, of European persuasion and profile, or the guy who happens to be a person of a darker skin? And I'm not saying he's black. I'm just saying somebody.
I know. Listen. I agree with you. That's what happens in our society. And yet the Supreme Court says there, well, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court says
unbelievable
racial issues.
Unbelievable.
In our country.
Unbelievable.
I agree it's unbelievable. That's the way a lot of people feel, because they want to have blinders on. They want to think that things are honky-dory just because you have a black president. No. No, because he gets lambasted all the time. His wife gets lambasted all the time.
Mm-hmm.
First time ever in history that has happened as much and the way it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, listen, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break, but this Zimmerman trial is not over, and whether he's acquitted, whether he gets manslaughter, whether he gets second-degree murder, his life will never be the same, ever.
No.
Ever.
No.
And maybe it'll serve him right. Maybe he'll learn not to just blanketly think or feel about certain people or be in a situation where he thinks he can be above the law. Don't go play Batman, ladies and gentlemen. Batman is a good fictional character. Good fictional character. But again, fictional being the key word there. So with that being said, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit you guys up some fantasy baseball, fantasy football. Jerry's going to rant, give him about 5 minutes to rant, and then we're going to move on. All right, keep it here with me. It's your boy FSP.
You all know and love her from the WNBA, but now you can hear her every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, featured at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. It's Time Out with Sylvia Crawley.
This is Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. I'm your host. I have a very interesting show lined up for you tonight. We have Mr. Otis Winston. Otis, thank you so much for being on the show.
You know, it's my pleasure, Sylvia.
You can also visit fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com for archives, advertising, and other information. Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. Information, motivation, variety.
I hit the wrong one. But ladies and gentlemen, it's me from Jefferson. I'm back in a place to be. We are about to talk fantasy football and fantasy baseball. Real quickly, JT and Cam Money, go ahead. In the league, I am the commissioner. Jerry and one of our other owners decided to make a trade, and it was, in my opinion, it could have been an even trade. It was an even trade if Ryan Braun wasn't staring at a 100-game suspension. But I protested it to the league, and within a couple of hours, the league voted it down. I didn't veto it. I voted to veto it, but I did not veto it. So,
well, let me put it this way. Okay, let me put it this way, and I'm gonna have to slap your hand on this one, man. You are the commissioner. You're supposed to be impartial and not put something on the board prompting people in the league to veto something. They're supposed to be able to, and I'm not saying that they weren't going to veto it, but if the commissioner is pushing you, if the commissioner is pushing you to veto it with his words on a message board that the whole league sees, then just like people jump on
it's
a bandwagon,
wrong.
They'll jump.
It will be wrong.
How can it be wrong? Huh?
Well, no, you're right. It would be wrong if the commissioner did that. If the
commissioner, you're the
commissioner. But an owner of a team did it. I didn't say as the commissioner.
But you can't do that. You can't do that because you're the commissioner. You have to be above being a owner, okay? Just like Bud Selig is an owner, he has to be above that because he's the commissioner. He can't come out publicly and say we can't do this or I'm going to veto this. You can't do that. You cannot do that as a commissioner. And to do that, I thought that was totally off base. And I thought that the trade was an even trade. Now, and I also put it on the post.
The
wait a minute. Let me fit. I'm going to do that right now. The trade was this, people. Jay Bruce, who's a very, very good player on the Cincinnati.
Here we go.
He is. He's a very good player on the Cincinnati Reds. He's rated, I think, within the top 50, if I'm not mistaken, overall ranking. Beginning of the year, he was rated like in the top 50, along with Justin Verlander, who hasn't been what he's been in the past, Justin Verlander. I packaged them together to go with an everyday player, Ryan Braun, who was labeled the number three player in the league. People, I know he may be coming off he may be facing a 100-game suspension, supposedly. Nothing's come down. And even if it does come down, there's an appeal process, and I guarantee you any of those guys, if they appeal it, they'll be playing the whole year. So this, in my opinion, is not a very uneven trade. This is an even trade. You got a pitcher, Justin Verlander, that's not pitching well, and you have a very good player being traded for the number three rated player at the beginning of the year. I don't think that's a bad deal. I couldn't believe it got vetoed. I think it got vetoed for the simple fact Mr. Vick said you should veto this. And I didn't think that was right, being you were the commissioner. That's not right. That is not right.
Oh, okay, and, your 5 minutes is – your 5 minutes, you got 20 seconds. Come on now.
It's not right. It wasn't right. You know, I'm co-commissioner. I'm co-commissioner, Have you ever heard, see me say I'm going to veto something on here?
Of course not, because you're making all the trades.
Well, nobody else has the balls to do that. Nobody else has the balls to bring to make trades. Everybody's so hung up on their team. And I understand some of these guys are doing well. Some guys aren't doing that well. And they still won't make any moves because they don't want, supposedly, in quotation marks, to get taken advantage of. Well, you know, this league is pretty close, okay? And all it takes is a week or two to get back in contention. But if your team is not performing, why hold on to the players that you have and why not try to make some moves? That's what I'm saying.
When you're always either number one or number four, you can say that. Yeah, no. When you're number one or number four, you can say that. But some of us
I started number 10 or 11 in the beginning of the season. And I started making moves.
Talking about that. Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can tell, the master is a little perturbed with me today. Okay. But.
You can't do that, Vic.
We're going to move forward.
You can't do that.
I mean, I didn't do it as a commissioner. That's the one thing I can say. I did not do it as a commissioner.
You're the commissioner. Regardless of what you say, you did it. You're the commissioner.
But as an owner of a team,
keep it to yourself.
No, you can't. Because if I have an objection, and I told everybody, and I put it out there, I said, if somebody wants to veto a trade, they have to post why they're vetoing it.
Nobody did.
I voted to veto it. I voted to veto it. So I had to post why.
Wait a minute. Okay? Until somebody else started posting or several other owners started posting, then I can understand you jumping in. But you taking the lead? You're the commissioner. You take the lead. People are going to follow after you because you're the commissioner. Do you understand what I'm saying there?
I mean, NCOs do lead from the front, and the officers stay in the back. I got you. But you're the officer. I'm the NCO. I'll lead from the front. I mean, that's true. That's true, sir. But anyway, we're going to move forward. We're going to move forward, JT.
Hey, you want to do the trade? We can do the trade. I sent some offers out there.
Well,
I tell you,
I told you what I need. I told you I need a center fielder. I have no need for a left fielder. I have several capable left fielders, several capable right fielders. One is on the DL right now. He'll be back after the All-Star break. And the one I have playing left field right now is better than the one you offered me. So it's no need for me to go down just to get a pitcher that I like. He's not as dominant as he was last year or this year. And this year he isn't that great, but I have pretty much the entire Detroit Lions pitching staff. But I just want Verlander, but I'm not willing to take on a bat I'm not going to use. I want a bat that I'm going to use. Gomez is somebody I can use. So, therefore, and Fieldman, come on, dude. I don't want that guy. High inflated ERA, 7-7. He has more hits than he has strikeouts. You insult me with that, but I still love it. But let's move on, because you guys know what it is. It's that time of the year. It's that time to shine. It's also football time.
Carrying the ball 20 times a game requires power and valor, not niftiness. The water bug and whippet backs rarely survive the wail and howl of the banshee. Stacked defenses in the pros. They must meld the buck of a billy goat with the sudden surge of a sprint. He does not move with polish or slickness. His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
It is Demolition Derby, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start this football stuff off a little bit differently today. There's one player that can safely say they played or will play with two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL anywhere. And we're talking about Wes Welker,
mm-hmm.
who played with Tom Brady and is about to play with Peyton Manning. But before we get to that, let's hear what Wes has to say about one of his former teammates. A guy that, you know, did some bad things. Talking about, or accused of doing some bad things. Talking about Aaron Hernandez. Here's Wes Welker on that.
Really feel for the victim's family. And, you know, it's a tough deal. And you know, I don't know. It's just one of those deals. It's, you know, you just really feel for that victim's family.
As you can tell, Wes didn't mention or didn't want to talk about Hernandez per se, but the undertone that I got from that is that the question was asked, you know, what do you think about the Aaron Hernandez situation? And he just spoke about the family. He didn't have any feelings for Aaron Hernandez. He didn't publicly state those feelings. I mean, that's the thing for a lot of folks, except for a few. Deion Branch came out and said that he was a Aaron Hernandez guy. Matt Light said he never was, and da-da-da-da-da. So, therefore, there are some issues there. What do you think about his non-committal mentioning of Hernandez?
Well, I don't blame him. I wouldn't get thrown into that at all. He's being strictly professional and just keeping it above board and directed his feelings, his thoughts that he conveyed to the victim's family versus saying anything directly about Aaron Hernandez. And I got to commend him for that. And, you know, it's not his place to keep – To keep piling on as an ex-teammate or whatever, so he I think he treated it the right way. Let me put it that way.
Very politically correct in that he left it alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing he didn't keep to himself was about comparing the Pats to the Broncos.
They're both you know, the consummate professionals and. You know, great organizations. You know, obviously the quarterbacks are great and coaches are great and the staff and everything's great. So, I mean, it's there are a lot of similarities.
In that statement, he basically said, I don't want to compare them because that's going to hurt my friend Tom Brady's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to compare the organizations because I was with one for a while and I'm here with a new one. That's what he really said.
Sure he did.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is. And this is an opportunity for Wes Welker to prove everyone wrong that he's a system receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to a different system that plays very similarly, but it's a different system. He'll be used the same way. But, you know, he can debunk some of those things. What do you got on
Well, if you've been looking at some articles about him and Peyton and whatever in the organization and the office, they're going to be running similar plays that he had in New England.
New England.
So
yeah.
They're going to be he's going to be used, like you said, in the same way with the same type of plays. So they've been watching tape, offense, and especially Peyton Manning. So Wes Welker is going to be very familiar with the type of offense his way that's going to get run. So
that's a good thing for him.
Good thing, right, good thing for anybody who gets the. Good thing for anybody who's going to draft him also. So, and I'll be talking about that.
Are you saying you're going to be drafting him? You're going to get him before you get a baby. You're going to get him before you get baby.
What I'm saying is this: starting July 28th.
Yeah,
starting July 28th. I'm going to be breaking down positions. Quarterbacks first week. Next week's going to be wide receivers. Next week's going to be tight ends. The last week is going to be running backs. Because that's my forte. And I want to be far enough into preseason and training camp to be able to give you the best evaluation of top running backs going into fantasy in the fantasy season. and going into your fantasy drafts, because a lot of people are going to be drafting in the month of August, and a lot of people like to draft in the late part of August. And my draft analysis is going to end up around the 18th of August, which will give you guys plenty of time to be able to draft for the next 2 weeks before the regular season starts, leading into September. So, 28th, the 4th, the 11th, and the 18th. 28th, the 4th, 11th, and the 18th. 4 weeks, four positions, quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, and ending up with the running back.
Well, I'm going to throw in there the IDPs because that's a steadily growing trend in a lot of fantasy teams and a lot of fantasy leagues now. You know, traditionalists like the team defense, which is fine. I like the team defense as well as the individual players because, you know, a lot of people look at these big names, but they really don't know who is getting all the tackles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's money there, and we can use that. But right now, let's get into...
I have to admit, before you go there, I have to admit, I didn't know too much about IDPs, getting into these leagues with IDPs, including yours. And it's a learning process and how to learn on the fly. And it's not as easy as you think picking the IDPs versus regular offensive players. So.
It is not. It is not. Yeah. That's why I have that specialty. I'm a little bit more complex. All right. Well, I'm going to bring something back that we did a long time ago.
Okay.
And we haven't done it in a while. But I'm going to bring it back.
Okay. Hello?
Well, yeah, I don't hear it. Well, I guess I got to move it up. You don't hear that?
It's very, very low. That's high. You got to turn it down a little bit.
I mean, I can't even hear it, dude.
Turn it up?
I can't hear it. I can't hear it.
I can't hear
you. Can you hear it at all?
No.
Well,
I hear very, very low. There you go. That's good.
All right, because I couldn't hear it with nothing. All right, ladies and gentlemen, pardon our technical difficulties. Let's hit what I believe to be the best division in the NFL right now, the NFC West. You have four solid teams. Yes, I said four, not three, but four solid teams. And I'm going to start with the one that everybody. I'm going to start with the one that everybody thinks is just terrible. Arizona Cardinals. Now, this, my friend, is the guide to success. I believe it to be Sports Illustrated's Fantasy Football Edition. This is where you find out what other coaches, as well as Peter King, thinks about certain players. Stick and stay. It's going to be a long ride. Here we go. Arizona Cardinals, enemy line. One coach says, on paper, Carson Palmer is an upgrade. They've got to protect him. They've got to make plays. They've got to get better players around him. The new head coach, Bruce Arians, has a gunslinger mentality of just throw the ball all over the place and take shots. Good for PPRs, guys. He's a torpedoes, full speed ahead type of guy. Rashad Mendenhall has fumble issues, but he's a tough runner. He's big, strong. He has, or had, breakaway speed. I don't know after his knee injury, though. He would be a guy who can score a lot of touchdowns in the red zone. Ryan Williams has had major injuries over the last 2 years. He's a risk-reward type of player. The Cardinals didn't have a running game last year. Anybody that gives an improvement because they were dead last in rushing. To bring in Stephon Taylor, can't hurt. Lezier is a dynamic possession receiver, a guy who, with all things being equal, would have 100-plus catches a year. His game is not built on speed, but as long as the quarterback is functional, he's functional. You can always use a receiver like Ryan Swoop. You notice they didn't mention Roberts or Malcolm Floyd just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Ryan Swoop. He's also a possession-type guy. Arians likes to throw the ball up the field if he can, but you can always make use of someone who can catch and make plays underneath. Andre Robertson, Michael Floyd are probably number three receivers on a good team. But for the Arizona, they're fighting for the number two position. Roberts has found a niche opposite Fitzgerald, and Floyd is a big, strong guy who's trying to find his position in the league. And this guy right here, oh man. Robert Hausler is an athletic receiving tight end. He's a poor man, Aaron Hernandez. He doesn't have Tom Brady for a quarterback. I want you to realize that. Rob Hausler is going to be a beast this year. Last year, he was pretty good. People bouncing off of this guy. He was like Gronk, the poor man's Gronk, not the poor man Aaron Hernandez in my book. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
According to SI, once to get, once to forget. The sleeper is Carson Palmer, who I said several weeks ago I think is going to have a great year as long as they have an offensive line. The bust, Ryan Williams. And I understand that. All right, here's their projected starting lineup. Carson Palmer, Rashad Mendenhall, with Ryan Williams being the third down back and Rashad Mendenhall being the goal line back. Wide receiver, Larry Fitzgerald, Andre Roberts, Michael Floyd, Ryan Swoop. Tight end, Rob Hausler, Jeff King, Jay Feely is the kicker. Okay? JT, do you want to go to the schedule or do you want to go over what the coach said about the player first?
Go to what the coach said about the player first.
All right. I tend to agree with whatever coach this was that made this synopsis. Carson Palmer is very serviceable. He's an upgrade of what they had last year, and that's all Larry needs is an upgrade from what he had last year. He made Chad Johnson and T.J. Houston-Zada household names in Cincinnati when he had an offensive line. Okay? I think T.J., who's your mama, on this team is going to be Mr. Swoop, according to what this coach says, you know, a young new guy that's like Larry Fitzgerald. And if he learns and listens to Larry, he can be that beast. Now, Andre Roberts, he probably won't get drafted. I don't think people are going to draft him. I don't think people are going to draft Michael Floyd because they think he's going to step up. This is Floyd's second year in the league. Normally, these players don't burst out to the third year. But A.J. Johnson, I mean, not A.J. Johnson, A.J., what's the guy in Cincinnati?
A.J. Green.
A.J. Green and a couple other dynamic receivers did in their first 2 years. And, Dez Bryant. And they're going to do even better in their third year.
Julio Jones.
Julio Jones, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
But this second-year receiver needs to step up because if Roberts takes his job as a number two, I think he'll fall to number four. I really think he might fall to number four. I really think that.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, they've got some targets here in the red zone, okay? Larry
mm-hmm.
Fitzgerald was targeted 20 times in the red zone, followed by Andre Roberts. How many times Floyd was targeted? 5. In the red zone rushing, LaRock Stevens Howland had 20 attempts in the red zone. Benny Wells is no longer there, and Ryan Williams had 6. So that tells me Rashad Mendenhall is going to be that guy at the goal line as well.
Absolutely.
Arians
had Rashad Mendenhall when he was with the Steelers. So
correct.
He's in love with Rashad Mendenhall. So.
Yeah, and in an interview he did with NFL Network, he pointed to the ring and said, Rashad got me this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put to bed Ryan Williams or anybody else stepping up and taking a lot of touches away from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Mendenhall's going to go late because of those injury and fumble problems, in my opinion. But that's what I feel on that. Do you have any thoughts before we go to the schedule?
Go right ahead, my man. I'm with you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to put the music back on. Here we go. 2013 schedule. They start off at St. Louis, then Detroit, at New Orleans, at Tampa, home for Carolina, at San Francisco, home for Seattle and Atlanta. Then they have a bye week. Then they come back, and it gets kind of easy but kind of tough. Home for Houston, at Jacksonville, home for Indianapolis, at Philly, home for St. Louis, at Tennessee, at Seattle. They finish up the season home with San Francisco.
Tough schedule, man.
But, you know what?
Very tough schedule.
You give your prediction first. Give yours first.
Okay. They play the AFC South and the NFC South, which includes Houston and Indianapolis in the AFC South, and in the NFC South, which includes Tampa Bay, Carolina, Atlanta, and New Orleans. This is a tough schedule for them. And they also deal with Detroit, even though they play Detroit at home. I'm looking at this, and Bruce Arians is going to have a rude awakening down in Arizona. They're going to be within the top five in the 2014 draft with a 2-14 season.
I give them 8-8.
You tell me where they're going to get 8 wins, and you tell me. You go down this schedule and you give your prediction on what you say it's 8-8. You give me 8 wins out of the teams that they're playing. 8 wins.
All right, JT. Before I do this, I smell a wager.
No.
I smell a wager.
We got one going on right now.
we don't have it going on yet.
You think they're going to be 8-8?
Yes.
You honestly think they're going to be 8-8?
Listen. I told you how I feel about Detroit. So, they're going to win at St. Louis. They'll beat Detroit. They'll lose to New Orleans. They'll beat Tampa. They'll beat Carolina. They'll lose at San Fran. They'll lose at Seattle. Then they'll lose to Atlanta. They'll come back off the bye. They'll lose to Houston. They'll beat Jacksonville. They'll beat Indianapolis. I predict they'll beat Philly. That's going to be a tough one because Philly's pretty good towards the end of the year. I think Philly's going to be so banged up that, you know, they might be looking at Barkley coming in at quarterback. Then I have them sweeping St. Louis. Then they'll beat Tennessee. They'll lose to Seattle. And in a surprise, to get to 8-8, they beat San Francisco at home.
Well, let me put it this way. I got a bill that says they won't get 8-8. I have a bill saying they won't get 8-8.
Okay. Done.
They have to get 8 wins.
They have to get 8 wins or better. 8 wins or better. Yeah. That's a done deal. That's a done deal, guy. Done deal. We shook it. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it.
Let me run down this now. They're playing at St. Louis. St. Louis is an extremely tough team with a very good defense, with very good DBs. Very good DBs. At home. They're going to lose that.
Okay.
They're going to come back and playing against Detroit. And I'm telling you, people are going to be surprised. Detroit's going to be the one of the surprise teams of the league. Arizona can't keep up with Detroit offensively, and they won't be able to do it with against Detroit. Plain and simple. Okay, I know Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu. I understand that. But they won't be able to keep up with the speed and the offensive threats Detroit has. They're going to lose that. And then once they do, they go to at New Orleans. They're going to lose at New Orleans. They're going to go to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay has improved their defense immensely, especially their pass defense. They're going to lose at Tampa Bay. That's a second road game. They're going to come back against Carolina. Carolina's not going to be a slouch playing at home. Now, that could be a toss-up game. But if they beat Carolina, that means they're 1-4 up until the point I'm thinking about here. They're going to lose against San Francisco. They're going to lose against Seattle. They're going to lose against Atlanta. So that puts them at 1-7 right there. Where they're going to run the table the next 8 games or whatever. They're going to lose playing against Houston. They can't stay with Houston. Jacksonville is going to be an easy. And you say they're going to lose against Indianapolis? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding
Jerry,
me?
Jerry, I'm not kidding.
Eight and
that's what's going on. 8-8. I want my $100. I want
eight
my. And let me bring in my cousin. My cousin's on the line, so I'm gonna bring him in real quick.
Mm-hmm.
8-8. We got $100 on it. And what's our other? What was our other bet? On who?
That's Detroit. You said Detroit was going to. Let me get back here.
They
were
going to get more than 5 wins.
They weren't going to get more than 5 wins.
Yes, that's what it was. And we're mauling that over.
So
that hasn't been consummated yet.
So if they're 6-10, I win that.
Yes.
If they're 6-10, I win that.
But we didn't make the bet yet. But that would be your that would be it. If they're 6-10. But
okay.
Let's get to my cousin because we didn't make that bet yet. But that's the parameter. You said you wanted to wait to the end of August or mid August, and I said okay. So let's bring in my cousin, Mr. Moore. Welcome to the program.
What's up, Slim? What y'all talking about? I heard you talking about them lines. I kind of agree with you, but I do think they're gonna win 6 this year, though.
Nah, man.
They got Reggie Bush. They're
going to
get 6 wins.
They're going to get a lot of points. I just don't think they're going to get a lot of wins. We're talking about the NFC West.
I think they're going to be a surprise team. There's always some surprise teams every year, and I think this is going to be one of them. So
yeah, I think they're due for a bounce up. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I got them between 6-10 and 8-8, and that's not really. Then what they do last year? 5 or 4?
They did.
I think they
3, or they did 2-4. Yeah, I think it was 3-13.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole 50% increase, man. I'm giving them, you know, 6-10, 7-8, 8-8. I think they're gonna be around in that range.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jerry,
I think they're gonna win games that nobody's expecting them to win.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about. That's
that's
talking about.
That's fine. So, Jerry, we'll do it this way since we haven't made the deal. We'll do it this way. They won't get more than 6 wins.
No. Wait a minute.
Well, we haven't made a bet on that.
You said.
But we made
a
bet. Go ahead.
No. We're going to stick with the original plan. There's no addendum to this. There's no addition to this.
Well, I haven't agreed to it yet.
Yes, you have. No. Now you're going to change up because you got somebody else's opinion. Now you're going to change up.
No. I mean, it's not because of that. It's because you said you want to wait till mid to late August, which is fine.
They won
That's
four
fine.
Games last year. They won 4 games last year. You can't tell me they can't win 2 more. We took this 5-11. You said you agreed
that.
To it. You agreed to it, but you said you'll wait until the end. But you agreed to it. So don't try to go back on it now, my man.
Okay, but we didn't make a monetary wager. That's what it was.
Yes, we did.
No, listen.
Yes, we did. I got it written down, and I told you. I got it written
no,
down
you
and I told
you. You didn't tell me the amount.
Yes, I did.
Can we go to St. Louis? Can we go to St. Louis, Mr. Zimmerman?
Okay, now you want
to
change
to
up. That's all right, Vic. That's okay. That's okay. Now you want to backtrack because somebody else agree with me, but that's okay.
No. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to have 5 wins or less. But I'll take that one extra game.
I tell you what,
you know,
and I hate to say it like this, go Texas are in the mail, okay?
The what?
Goodness.
What'd he say?
You know what make that drink so cold, Jerry? He don't even know what that is.
No, I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, God. That is
I didn't hear
cold.
What you said. What did you say?
I said
what did you say?
Cold.
Hey, cuz, he said the Kotex is in the mail.
Oh, I know what Kotex are, and he can stick them on his because they're bleeding. Like I said, George Zimmerman. But let's move on, because this is a live show, and I'm going to beat you down for that. But anyway, let's move on. Ladies and gentlemen, y'all know I love to do this, so I'm going to do it one more time for this team. Let's get some fresh lemonade going for the St. Louis Rams. Mike, I'm going to mute you because you got a lot of background noise. All right, ladies and gentlemen. The St. Louis Rams, according to a rival coach, here we go. The Rams have been working hard to turn that corner. They're close. Sam Bradford has been a potentially elite quarterback. I don't like that term for him, though. Stuck on a bad team. He's had an elite running back, but the pieces around him weren't there. When we played them, we wanted to hit Bradford, obviously. We thought that we would have a chance to pound them and beat them up front, beat them up front because their offensive line wasn't very good. Steven Jackson was a big, strong, powerful guy. He pounded it in there. Now they've gone to a smaller, quicker back in Isaiah Pete and Daryl Richardson. I'm not sure if they are going to have a running back by committee with Zach Stacy there too. That's probably what it is. It will be interesting to see how they play that out, that changing of the guard from the big backs to the smaller backs. They do have a lot of good young talent. They needed to help at the skill positions, and they're on paper, they got it by drafting Tavon Austin and Stedman Bailey. Austin is a quick wide receiver. That was a good pickup. I thought they would draft wideouts because they lost Danny Amendola. Right now, Chris Gibbons, a speed guy, is a poor man's Mike Wallace, and he'll learn to be a better route runner. Last year, we just knew that the Rams' wideouts were fast. Plus, the game plan was to stop Bradford and Jackson. The rest of them, other than Amendola, were just young guys. Now they've gone out and signed Jared Cook, an athletic tight end. You have a game plan for him. How good would the Rams be? I don't know because they've got the 49ers and Seahawks in the same division. With that being said, JTATM Money and my cousin, the sleeper is Daryl Richardson because we don't know if he's going to be starting back or not. He's in line to be starting back, but Zach Stacy can fight for that job, so he's a more of a pounder and he has speed. A bust that they say to watch out for is Chris Gibbons. He's not consistent. That's the big thing about Chris Gibbons. He is not consistent. Projected starting lineup for the St. Louis Rams, Sam Bradford, Daryl Richardson, Isaiah Peterson for the first four games, by the way. You got to remember that. And Pete lost out on the starting opportunity last year when Daryl Richardson took over. So he's not going to be third down back. Zach Stacy, the rookie, is scheduled to be the goal line back. Could be starting back as well. Starting wide receiver, Tavon Austin, short, small guy who's going to get banged around a lot. He's smaller than Percy Harvin, but it's definitely close to Chris Gibbons. Brian Quick, who was their first-round pick last year, has fallen out of favor to the third receiver, and Stedman Bailey has a chance to take back from him. Jared Cook from Tennessee is a good pass-catching tight end, and they've pretty much given up on Lance Kendrick. Greg the Leg Zerlin is the kicker. So therefore, with that being said, gentlemen, do you have anything you want to add to what the coach, the rival coach, said about the team before we get into the schedule? I'm going to start with Mike first, then I'm going to go to Jerry.
I think he sounds like a coach that's been around there for a while because I like what Jeff Fisher is doing there. You know, it's just going to take him a little time to get it together. I don't agree with his assessment of any Jeff Fisher's team that you just hit them in the mouth and they're going to just succumb. I just don't believe that. Jeff Fisher is a real tough dude. You know, tough, defensive-minded type dude. But I do agree with him, you know, about the Sam Bradford thing. You know, you got to get to him and you got to hit him, and that's the whole key. to everything, and you know, and he was absolutely right about, you know, them having Steven Jackson, and they just could not do anything with it. I mean, they just haven't had that defense, and you know, and like you said earlier, Vic, they in there with the Seahawks and the 49ers. Yo, that's a three-way wrecking mess about to happen for the next 5 years, yo. I'm telling you, it's going to be a whole bunch of smack-talking, hitting them back and forth. Do not leave, you will be sadly mistaken to leave the Rams out of that race. Even though, you know, the Seahawks and the 49ers are the top-tier dogs, but don't leave out Jeff Fisher. I would not count him out. I wouldn't count out Sam Bradford. I just think, well, what is this? His second year? It's just his second year. So
it's fourth year.
His fourth year?
Sam Bradford's fourth year.
Jeff Fisher's
second year.
Oh yeah, I know. I've gone crazy. About to say, man, y'all done put 2 years on me already. I'm already going through a midlife crisis. Y'all hear me?
Y'all hear me? Stop.
Y'all hear me driving this sports car I'm thinking about buying.
Well, if that's the noise you're going to make on the air, stop it. Midlife crisis. But anyway.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jerry.
You know, this is a division of have and have nots. This team is going to be very defensive-minded team to reflect the coach. They were 7-8-1 last year. I don't think they make a step forward. I think they take a step back, unfortunately, because the fact is I'm looking at their schedule just like I looked at Arizona. They play the NFC South.
Well, let's go down the whole schedule.
And I think the defense is going to try to keep them in the game as the offense develops.
Well,
go
let's
ahead.
Go down the schedule, JT.
Mm-hmm.
And we can give out our predictions because I think they're going to be at the bottom of the NFC West.
Mm-hmm.
I really think so. Arizona at
Atlanta.
Over
top of Arizona?
I think Arizona's going to be 8-8, and what I have predicted for St. Louis is going to be a reason why they're going to be below Arizona. Okay, they start at home for Arizona. Then they go to Atlanta, they go to Dallas, then they're home for San Fran, home for Jacksonville, go to Houston, at Carolina, home for Seattle, home for Tennessee, at Indianapolis, then they have a bye. Then they are home for Chicago, at San Fran, at Arizona, home for New Orleans, home for Tampa Bay, and finish at Seattle. With that being said, this team is going to get four to five wins or less. In my opinion, they'll get 4 to 5 wins, and that's going to be it. They have a brutal schedule, especially at the beginning of it. Finishing up isn't easy either. Finishing up with Chicago, at San Francisco, at Arizona, home for New Orleans, okay, Tampa, their home, and then finishing at Seattle, that's brutal, in my opinion. That's really brutal. So I have them winning 4 or 5 games at best.
Well,
the fact that, and the reason why I said that is because, not only because of the schedule, because their offense is so young. So young.
Well, that's the reason why I said the offense, the defense is fairly solid and getting that much better, and it's ahead of the offense, and the offense, they're getting their pieces in, and the offense is developing. Sam Bradford's finally, supposedly getting some decent outside weapons. They lost Steven Jackson, which unfortunately would have added to this offense, but they've got some speedy young running backs that they're going to try to fill the void. But because of the schedule, because I said they play the AFC and the NFC South, and it was sprinkled in with a few teams from the East and the North, I see them at 3-13.
Wow!
Yeah, this team is they won seven games last year. They gave San Francisco probably the toughest battle of the two games that they played San Francisco of any other team in the league. But I still think they're going to be near the bottom of the division. I can't see it. I mean, they have too many obstacles to overcome with these teams that they're playing, no matter what, if it's the first week or the last week.
I agree with you. Well, I agree with you because they have a lot of young offensive talent. When they were playing San Fran tough, it was because they was running Steven Jackson. It was because they had a veteran offense or some veteran players on offense. Danny Amendola had a great game, you know, stuff like that. So minus those two big figures on their team, on offense, it's going to be tough for them to be explosive offensively, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Mike, real quick.
Nah, I was just going to say, I don't know, I just can't see it. I just don't see them being beneath the Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Cardinals, I mean, they have absolutely no quarterback.
Is decent. Rashad Mendenhall is a decent runner too. So, I mean that's
yeah.
Problem,
but
so.
you gotta give him a year to get everything acclimated. You know what I'm saying? You gotta give him a year to get acclimated. So, you know, I'm not expecting if the Cardinals get more than four wins, that's a successful season for them. If they get more than four, in my opinion. You know, but I don't see three or four wins because, you know, you got to remember, you know, a lot of those teams that we're looking at now ain't gonna look the same way in September, and they not gonna look the same in October or November. Like, you know, Chicago just, you know, we don't know who they are. We have no idea who they are.
Head coach, right?
Right. So I mean. I mean, I can see where y'all going with it, and I can join the consensus and say they'll take a step back, but I firmly believe that they'll do at least six games this year. They'll at least do six.
Well, I mean, it's each his own. I disagree, but we're gonna move on because we got about 12 minutes left of live air, and ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna go overtime with the team that I think is gonna be the NFC West champion. Because I really think that they're going to ratchet up another notch this year. But let's talk about the team that I think is going to finish second in the NFC West. Hit my music. All right. Enemy line. What a rival coach said. The 49ers can make it back to the Super Bowl. Their team is so deep. Colin Kaepernick is very lean and athletic. He's got a strong arm and he's very accurate. I would assume they will continue to let him run the ball until he gets hit hard. He's dynamic and opens up so many options for their team. I don't think Frank Gore slows down. He has excellent hands out of the backfield. Kendall Hunter is explosive and quick. He'll probably be 95% of the player he was last year. For his Achilles injury. LaMichael James has been explosive through the holes. Injuries happen. I think Michael Crabtree is going to hurt them somewhat because he was able to create so many plays after he caught the ball. You hate to lose one of your playmakers, but I believe the 49ers are so deep that they'll find a way to get his catches to someone else, whether it's A.J. Jenkins or Quentin Patton or even Vernon Davis. The younger guys will have an opportunity. Anquan Boldin is the consummate possession receiver. He's a big-bodied guy. He's played deceptively fast. Davis is not a big-power guy. He's not the fastest, but he's the great mix of in-between. He's big enough to block and small enough and quick enough to go up the field. He's becoming a leader. I see them using him the same way as a mismatch against whoever he's on. They'll go to the wideout first, then Davis, and Vance McDonald will be the last option. If nobody's open, they'll throw it to him. The Niners have so many options that you just can't eyeball one guy. You have to defend the whole field. And what's And that's what makes this team such a big threat. The sleeper, and I agree with this, is Anquan Boldin. I thoroughly disagree with their bust. I thoroughly disagree with their bust. Vernon Davis. Thoroughly disagree with that.
No way.
Yeah, I agree. Their projected starting lineup, Colin Kaepernick, Frank Gore. Frank Gore being third down and goal line, although I think LaMichael James is going to come in more on third downs because he was a very good asset last year. Anquan Boldin, A.J. Jenkins, Quentin Patton, and you know Michael Crabtree is not the is going to be there, so it might be another receiver that they picked up. I can't remember who's the other receiver they picked up, but that's who it is. They have Vernon Davis out of wide receiver sometimes too. Starting tight end is Vernon Davis, and then Vance McDonald. And Phil Dawson is their field goal kicker. I think they're going to be in second place because I think they have, even though they're the same teams, as Jerry likes to say, it's when you play those teams. And based upon their schedule, they might not finish out too strong, in my opinion. But with that being said, JT, giving your analysis of what the one coach said about the 49ers, and then I'm going to go to Mike.
Well, the one thing I have to disagree with, because just like you alluded to, that Vernon Davis, by all reports, is lining up outside as a wide receiver also. So, and he can play that because he's got the speed and the athletic ability to play a wide receiver, someone like an Anquan Boldin type, but more of a more explosive. I have to disagree that Vernon Davis is going to be a bust. I do agree that this team is going to be a explosive team, in my opinion. And I think that this is one of the contending teams to get back to the Super Bowl, without a doubt. I can see it's extremely upside, and a more explosive Colin Kaepernick. Playing a full season compared to only playing 10 games. There's a lot of ceiling still left in Colin Kaepernick's game. So I'll leave what I think of the record until we get to that.
All right, Mike.
I don't know what this guy's talking about. Vernon Davis is a bust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he think he's so much of a bust, he need to put on the pads and helmet and go line up and go check him, because that youngin, you know, he got emotional issues or whatever, but he don't have any other distraction issues with him. You know, he's a good youngin, so and he's a good player, so I like him a lot. As far as the San Francisco 49ers, they are definitely the team in the NFC. Period. You know, you can make an argument about Green Bay. You know, you could float Atlanta out there, but they're gonna have to show me until I believe it. But San Francisco is the team to beat. Seattle nipping at their heels in the division. That's gonna be good. Those are gonna be two games to really, you know, must see football TV. Those two games. I really like Colin Kaepernick. He's got a lot of upside. He's not better than RG3, but he's a very good quarterback. Very, very good quarterback.
I like how you snuck that in there. Come on.
Oh yeah. You know I gotta get it in. But Frank Gore has just been, you know, a pillar of professionalism. He's been very consistent, you know what I'm saying? And for a running back to be running the way he's been running all this long time. Sorry about that. All this long time, I'm really beginning to, I mean, just take my respect to him to a whole new level. The Michael James, you know, when he gets in there, he'll be able to do some things, you know, help them out, maybe even look to take over for Gore because, you know, he's getting up there in age. But he's still being productive, so you don't know when that's going to fall out. But, hopefully, what was the deal with Chris Street? Did he get hurt? Yeah, he got hurt. He's gone for the year, right?
Yeah, he's gone for the year. He tore his ACL.
Yeah, he tore his ACL. Yeah, so he's gone for the year. You know, that's a shame, but I don't think that's going to stop this team. You got Anquan Boldin, and you got a bunch of other young guys out there. I really like this coach. I like both of those brothers as coaches. They do good work as coaches. You know, they he's a bit of a jerk, but so he wins, and he knows how to build. And you know, some guys are leader of men. Some guys are just very good conciliary counselors, if you will. But this dude is very much alpha male. I like him. I respect him. I take all the jerk about him, you know, any day, anytime. But that's all I got.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got about 4 minutes left alive there. We're going to get to our predictions. But first, I want to let you know that every Sunday at 10 a.m., you have the Master Plan with JT ATM Money. I'm not sure what he's going to talk about this week, but check them out. Same place, blogtalkradio.com/BICHBK, 10 a.m., the Master Plan. Then on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you have, Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. Sylvia is a dynamic individual. She has great guests, and she gets into that moment in your life that you decided, oh, let me stop, pause, reflect, and think about what's going on. How can I change it? How can I fix it? And go back and finish playing this game of life. That's pretty much what her show's about. So that's where we're at with her, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Monday. Then, on Thursdays, you've got the FSP Crew Show. Jeff Black and Jerry always hold it down. They've been on this boxing kick as of late because Black has been going to all these boxing events. I mean, hey, do what you do. But those guys hold the station down. They are very informative, very enlightening, and very entertaining in their commentary. Every 8 p.m. Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio, look them up. Then on Fridays, yeah, buddy, Mr. No Chaser himself, Mr. Mac Williams, co-hosted by Jerry Taylor. That show, pretty much anything goes. Anything goes. It is very mature at times, and sometimes it's not. But the conversation will leave some people with their mouths dropped. That's every Friday, 7 p.m. right here. And then on Saturdays, right back here with us, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Fantasy Sports and Politics. Myself, along with my boy, JT ATM Money. We do what we do because we do it for you, and we love what we do. Real quick, Mike, what did you have to say before we get to these predictions?
What I was going to say was I don't know how Jerry does it. I really don't know how he do it. I have to really commend you, brother, because I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it.
Dealing with Mac Williams.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, to go from Mac and then to go to deal with my cousin. I mean, my cousin,
oh,
you
really?
Can deal with him. He's much better to deal with than Mac. You know,
really?
you just make Vic think that he running something or controlling something. He all right. But Mac,
really?
He's just super.
That's enough for the peanut gallery. All right, let's go to the
desert. Oh, boy.
All right, real quick, because we got about a minute left alive there. I'm going to give my prediction and go down the games. And then all I want you guys to do before we go off the air really loud is give your points, your numerical value for their record. Green Bay at Seattle, Indianapolis at St. Louis, Houston, Arizona, at Tennessee, at Jacksonville, bye week, Carolina, at New Orleans, at Washington, St. Louis, Seattle, at Tampa, Atlanta, at Arizona. What do you think, JT? Real quick, numerically.
12-4.
Woo! I don't think so, but okay. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Jerry. 12-4 until they show me different. This team...
10-6 is mine. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for listening to us. If you're going away, that's great. Come on back. We're here every time for you. If you want to hear what we have to say about the Seattle Seahawks, check out the archives. It's going to play again, and we love to play our shows over and over again. Keep doing it for us. Stick around. Come back next week. check out tomorrow's episode of The Master Plan, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, JPATM Money. He's got some information for you. You might really, really enjoy it, okay? We'll see you guys in overtime. The reason why I say 10 and 6 is because I think they have a very hard last part of their schedule. The first part of the schedule, Green Bay at Seattle, Indianapolis at St. Louis, Houston, Arizona at Tennessee, at Jacksonville, are all winnable. I think the first game of the season, I think they beat Green Bay. I really think they beat Green Bay. They lose in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They come back and run off a couple wins against Indianapolis at St. Louis. It's going to be a tough game at Houston. I got to see what Houston's working with. We haven't got to them yet, but we will. So I'm going to give that right now. I'm going to give that to Houston. Then they beat Arizona. They beat Tennessee. They beat Jacksonville, right? But then they come back after the bye. We're going to get tough because everybody plays tougher at the end of the year. They come back and they play Carolina at home. They beat Carolina. But then they lose two straight games, in my opinion, because they're on the road, and I think they're going to be a little beat up. They lose at New Orleans. They lose at Washington.
No, I don't think so.
I think they come back and beat St. Louis. They beat Seattle because they're at home, only because they're at home. I think they lose to Tampa, lose to Atlanta, and then beat Arizona to finish out the season. Or did I say Arizona beat them at the end of the season? No, excuse me. They beat Tampa, they lose to Atlanta, and then they lose to Arizona. Well, I think I said Arizona beats them at the end of the year Arizona. Yeah, so that's where I see them at 10-6.
Well, like you said, and like I say, you're entitled to your opinion. I think you're wrong, but you're entitled to your opinion. I think you're wrong. I think this is still the class. I think they're still the class of this division. It's going to be a hard fight with the other team that we're going to talk about, but I still think they're the class of this division.
Oh yeah, definitely. They run that division. They run that division. Yes, sir. They had a team.
I think Seattle is the better team, overall team, in my opinion. Overall. The best overall team. But like I said, we're going to talk about the team who
overall,
I think
overall who?
In that division.
Wow.
Hold on. Which division are you talking about? The Green Bay division or the San Francisco division?
San Francisco.
I said Seattle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I said Seattle.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Green Bay. I'm sorry.
No. I said Seattle.
No.
Well, we're about to talk about them right now. Hit my music, yay! Seattle Seahawks. What a rival coach says. What a rival.
You need some new music.
Says. That's why I muted him. My only question with Russell Wilson is, will he have the sophomore jinx? He's a mobile quarterback. Oh, well, I guess we just lost our cousin. My cousin. He's a mobile quarterback who's very accurate. He can make plays with his arms or his legs. He's very smart. I was impressed with him. Marshawn Lynch can repeat his 2012 numbers unless his body breaks down. He's a guy who is built on power, not finesse. He has that deceptive breakaway speed. He's going to score a lot of touchdowns because he touches the ball a lot. Robert Turbin has been a solid workhorse-type guy who gives you quality plays for minutes when he gets in. The Seahawks' run game is a power run game, but their passing game is about finesse. They run the zone read, so it's opened up avenues for the running backs because you have to defend the whole field vertically and horizontally. If Christian Michael can be a good downhill running back, he'll love that kind of system because it'll make holes bigger. Percy Harvin begins a dynamic option. Brings a dynamic option. He can run out of the backfield, he can catch, and he can run. He can be in the slot. I think he's really going to open up that offense for Wilson. He has speed to go deep and can run the ball.
Kenyon Rice is somewhat injury prone. He's not a deep threat. Golden Tate is sneaky fast. He'll probably be groomed to be the number two wide receiver, and he's probably just learning he can play in this league at a high level and is getting more confident each year. Zach Miller is a great outlet, a great security blanket for Wilson when deep passes aren't open. He's an athletic tight end who gets most of his catches underneath. The Seahawks have a fine team and a good defense. They really do. That was what one coach said. The sleeper, and I don't see him as a sleeper, but SI does, Russell Wilson. A potential bust? I can agree. Sidney Rice. With Percy Harvin being there, Sidney Rice should have a lot more one-on-ones, but will he get that attention? And will he catch the ball? We'll see. Potential depth chart. Russell Wilson, followed by Brady Quinn, Marshawn Lynch, Robert Turbin, Christian Michael. Third down and goal line. I think the third down back is going to be Marshawn Lynch. I think it might be Turbin a little more. But the goal line back is definitely Marshawn Lynch. Starting wide receivers, and they have a pretty good set of wide receivers. Percy Harvin, Sidney Rice, Golden Tate, and Doug Baldwin. Zach Miller is a tight end, followed by Anthony McCoy. And the kicker, Steven Hauschka. JT, your thoughts on what the enemy rival coach had to say about the team?
Well, this team has got it's a very good defense, and I still say it's a developing offense. I understand that they still have Marshawn Lynch. I understand they got Percy Harvin from the Minnesota Vikings. They got Sidney Rice. They also have the tight end, with Zach Miller, and Russell Wilson. These guys, with the combination of the defense, and they also added Antoine Winfield from Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken, from the DB to the DBs.
Yep.
So they do have a good mixture of a good defense and a good offense. The question mark, and it was a question mark last year, and I still think it's a question mark, is their wide receivers. I understand they got Percy Harvin, and they moved Percy Harvin all over the field like Minnesota did. But the question is their wide receivers. They don't have strong wide receivers, in my opinion. They're still developing, and that includes Sidney Rice. They're still developing. And the question mark, just like Colin Kaepernick in Seattle, is if Russell Wilson is going to progress as a quarterback as he did last year compared to this year. I still say they're the second team in this division. But it's very close. Let me put it that way. Just like it was close last year, I think it's close this year. And these two teams don't like each other, and they're going to prove it on the field when they go up against each other at home, at home. So, that being said, you can go through the schedule, and then we can go from there.
All right. At Carolina, San Francisco, Jacksonville, at Houston, at Indianapolis, Tennessee, at Arizona, at St. Louis, Tampa Bay, at Atlanta, Minnesota, then they get a bye week. New Orleans, at San Francisco, at the Giants, Arizona, and finishing up with St. Louis. I mean, call me crazy, call me whatever, but I see 12-4, 13-3. That's what I see. Young man.
Okay. Well, like I said, I told you these two teams are very close together, and their records, in my opinion, are going to be very close. I had San Francisco at 12-4. I have Seattle at 11-5. So that's a margin of one win or the other can sway who's going to win this division and who's not. It's very tight, but I think still San Francisco – it's a class of the division. I think they have a better defense than Seattle, and I think that's what's going to prove them to be the better team.
So what's the record for Seattle?
I told you, set 11-5.
11-5, that's not bad. But
no,
I think
I said these teams are too close. I mean, are very close. So 12-4 San Francisco, 11-5 for Seattle. And depending on, and quite naturally, it's always the case, depending on one or two of these games, depends on who's going to win the division. But these teams are very close to each other, but I have to give the nod to the NFC division champs of the West, division champs of, the conference champs, which is the San Francisco 49ers. And they're on a mission, and I do believe, regardless of the fact that they lost Crabtree or not, I think they have pieces to pick up the pieces from the Crabtree, and I think they have the better defense. And that's going to be proved.
Okay.
That's, in my opinion, that's going to prove to be them the better team with the better defense.
Okay. I think Seattle is the better team, but we can agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Not
the first or last time.
Nope, won't be. Ladies and gentlemen, that is your NFC Western Division. I think we did a pretty decent job breaking it down for everybody out there. We disagree or differ on all of the teams pretty much, where they're going to land and stuff like that. But in these cases, Dick has proven to be right 90% of the time. So, we'll see.
Hey, I got a question for you before you go any further. Does your wife treat your bruises on your back?
You know, last time you did that, I won $400 because you bet against Seattle. So,
I'm not betting against Seattle this time.
Oh, you're not betting against this time? Oh. Okay. All right. Hey, it's all good, bro. It's all good. But anyway.
You know it is, man. We go back a little bit, so yeah, it's all good.
Oh yeah. Those bruises feel good when you're putting them $100 bills on them. Yeah. That's all I got to say. They might come late, but they're gonna come. Next week.
Yes, sir.
Finish out with. NFC
and
East.
East, absolutely.
We finish out the NFC with the NFC East, and
mm-hmm.
we should have a good old time with that because Cowboys fans will be out. We'll try to get Black on the line. I'm a Redskin fan. Jerry's in the New York, New Jersey area, even
mm-hmm.
though he's abandoned his Jets. Well, if Jeff comes on, we'll have Jeff talk about his Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you can back the Eagles, I guess. I don't. But we'll see what happens next week on Fantasy Sports and Politics. It's me, this is FSP. You guys, you want to say JTH and your money?
No, not really. Not right now. Just good luck this weekend.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Look like you're going down the flames again.
You know what? It's okay. Anything can happen.
Yeah, okay.
Anything and everything needs to happen. But the categories are close. The categories are close. That's the sad thing. Most of the categories are close.
Yeah,
but
I'm
not going to swear.
Let me say this. You know, when we're both in a fantasy baseball league categories, so you have to win a category, the most categories, quite naturally, to win the week. And it's very frustrating when you are looking at your categories, and they're very close. And going into whatever night it goes, especially during the weekend when it's Friday night, Saturday, or Sunday, and you need your players to, or you need your pitchers to come through, and you only need a couple things to happen for
yep.
you to win that category, and they don't do it. For some reason, something fluky happens. And you just
you
shake your
no
head.
Decision.
Yes. And you shake your head like, and you see that the majority of your players have ideal matchups to go against whatever pitchers they have, and none of it pans out. they have the worst night or whatever pitcher pitches to hit a career game. He pitches lights out. It boggles my mind because I've watched categories throughout the weekend. Like, all I need is this. All I need is this, and I got players in line, and it doesn't happen. Now, take for instance, and I hate to go on this tangent, but I have to because this is how frustrating it can be. 3 weeks ago, I had two players from the St. Louis Cardinals, which is one of the better hitting teams in the league, in the National and the American League, one of the better hitting teams in the league, the St. Louis Cardinals. And I had, at the time, when I had Carlos Beltran and Yadier Molina on my team. And they were the last two guys playing between both two teams. And I needed those two guys to get two hits between the two of them. And both of them, absolutely both. And all I needed, those two guys to get one hit apiece. And I would have won that category, and I would have won that week, and both guys went 0-for. That's how frustrating it could be when you have the leading, I think one of the leading hitters, which is Yadier Molina, go 0-for-4, and Carlos Beltran, which is another 300 hitter, go 0-for-4. And all you need is them to get a hit, a piece, to win a category, which will win you that week. That's how frustrating fantasy baseball can be at times.
Well, I agree with you because if they get strikeouts, you know, that hurts your other categories for average.
Yes.
It hurts your strikeout total.
Yes.
It hurts a lot of different things. I mean,
yes.
I'd rather them fly out or ground out. That way your average might be the only thing that's impacted. But,
yes.
You know. Anyway, case of Oscar. We'll see what happens. I mean, I'm just fighting for a spot out of the cellar right now. And hopefully it'll turn around for me.
I feel for you, man.
I mean,
I don't know how you do it. I know you're fighting every week, but it's like a fight in futility, to tell you the truth. I mean,
it's just the way you work.
You are 12th, and you're not even close to being 11th. You know that, don't you?
I know because I just lost big time to the 11th player.
I thought
I was going to – I mean, all week long I'm beating this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Come Friday, he turns it around and then smokes me on Sunday. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all
good. Yeah, that's how frustrating it could be.
I'll get my revenge in football. I mean, you know, I did well last year. I think I'm going to do well this year. I think I'm going to do extremely well this year, actually. Instead of winning 3 championships, I think I'll win maybe 5 or 6.
Okay.
But I would love to make a trade with you, Mr. Taylor. I would love to continue our yearly second round, third round, for first and fifth round.
That's not happening.
I told you I
had one of the worst years in fantasy football I've ever had since I played. I've had that absolutely the worst. And you know what? I don't know if it was because of I was overconfident, I didn't put enough work in, or I know it's because I gave away some draft picks I shouldn't have in a few leagues. That is not happening. Everything is going to be pristine going into these drafts. I'm not fooling with any kind of picks. It's not happening. It's not happening.
Come on, Jerry.
I'm on
a
mission.
Have a heart.
I'm going to mission them. I think I got 8 or 9 leagues. I plan to win half of them. So let me put it that way. So
okay.
I can tell you is whatever league you're in, beware, because my master hat is going to be in full effect going into these drafts.
Okay. If you say so. All right,
Lizzo. All right,
it's
Kermit.
Time to go. For real?
Hey, that's what you sounded like. That's what you just sounded like.
I'm a hop all over you. But all right. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to one of the best shows on the planet, in my opinion.
Fantasy Same here.
And politics. I'm a little biased, but it is
so
what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, JT, you ready to get up out of here?
Absolutely, man. from me and you, from you and me, you know what time it is, and you know where you've been. You've been listening to
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking Fantasy Sports and Politics. Fantasy Sports.